Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1151, BioPsyop Apocalypse Now, part 11, COVID-19 updates, part 2. This is being recorded on September 13th of the year 2020. In the last, 10 programs, we have been talking about the context in which the COVID-19 outbreak has taken place. We have spoken about events in Korea, overlapping covert operations, and deep politics going back to and even before World War II. We have spoken about the role of the Uyghurs, a Turkophone Muslim minority in China's Xinjiang province, I am probably mispronouncing that, that have been the focal point of not only destabilization efforts, but yea verily as I speak, the Walt Disney film Mulan, which is a live remake of a full-length animated movie done back, I think, in the late 90s. I don't watch TV and rarely go to movies, but that is the focal point of controversy involving, by the way, some of the same people, such as Adrian Zenz, a German end times Christian whose gravitas vis-a-vis the Uyghurs comes from his position as a fellow at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, an outgrowth of the Captive Nations Committee and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, and going back to that, the Galen organization that we spoke about in our last five. Well, really, the series of The Space Plane and COVID-19, The Paperclip Legacy, Parts 1 through 5. There is a controversy of sorts surrounding that. The fact that Adrian Zenz bases his total of 1 million people interned, 1 million Uyghurs interned in, quote, re-education camps, unquote, is based on a single interview with Istiklal TV, which, among other elements and individuals, gives voice to people and elements associated with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. In this program, we are going to be updating our inquiry into COVID-19. In particular, this will supplement For the Record program number 1138, BioPsyop Apocalypse Now, part 10, dealing with bad medicine, specifically remdesivir, which we are going to talk about, and also the Moderna and other vaccines that are in development and that may provide something of a Big Pharma October surprise for Donald Trump. There has been a lot of publicity for the interview that Donald Trump gave to Bob Woodward, who has now published a new book. Woodward, by the way, best known as for working with Carl Bernstein on the Watergate scandal. He has a background in naval intelligence and specifically worked with a group of naval officers, including former Admiral Maurer, associated with the ultra-right-wing Western Goals Institution. And Woodward, I think, probably is actually ONI. There is an old saying, once ONI, always ONI, and the possibility, I believe it is more than that, that Woodward may actually be working for Naval Intel is something to remember. We talk about CIA all the time. The ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence, is one of this country's most important and powerful intelligence services. In that interview, Trump was quite candid about the lethality of the SARS-CoV-2, that is the virus that causes COVID-19. And by the way, a very mysterious virus it is. The effects of that virus and the epidemiology are still very much being investigated. It does strange things to the brain. It does strange things to the blood. It appears to affect men more than women. There are many things that are unknown or yet to be discovered about this virus. The misunderstanding on the part of the American public and the media in particular of this is fundamental. To give you an idea of how this is generally seen, and then I will give you my own take on that, the New York Times of September 10th of 2020 has an editorial, Negligence with American Lives, and it reads in part, on February 7th, during a taped interview with Bob Woodward, President Trump acknowledged that the coronavirus could be transmitted through the air, that it was very dangerous, and that it would be difficult to contain. Quote, this is deadly stuff, he told the investigative journalist. You just breathe the air, and that's how it's passed, the president warned. Despite his apparent understanding of the severity of the disease and its method of transmission, over the next month in five cities around the country, Mr. Trump held large indoor rallies which were attended by thousands of his supporters. Mr. Trump spent weeks insisting in public that the coronavirus was no worse than a seasonal flu, that it would disappear when the seasons changed, he promised in late February. We're doing a great job, unquote, he said in early March. Well, at one level, that is vintage Donald Trump. The man has never done anything honest or straightforward in his entire life. After Trump was elected and before he was inaugurated, I did a series of programs based on the book by David K. Johnston called The Making of Donald Trump. And again, the man never in his entire life has done anything worthwhile, anything straightforward, I should say, or honest, so this should come as no surprise. The mistake, in my opinion, that is being made concerns the concept that Trump is mishandling the virus and COVID-19. I suspect that Trump may very well be a mind control job. That is obviously speculative, but whether or not he is, the fact of the matter is that this virus is doing what the far right wants. It is a wealth concentration virus, and we'll touch on that ever so briefly in this program. We are going to do several programs about how this virus is concentrating wealth at the same time. And inextricably linked with that is the fact that this virus is taking wealth away from a great many areas and institutions that Donald Trump and the interests associated with him oppose. It is destroying urban areas. It is making things very hard for nonprofits. It is trashing public transit, education, both at the college level and at elementary school. And the Trump administration and the elements of the far right, they want people going to religious schools. They want people to attend, the Our Lady of the Bloody Nails Middle School and learn that the earth is 7,000 years old. Never mind about things like the Grand Canyon. They want people who can't tell the difference between geology and geography. Well, it all begins with G, and it's that earth stuff, you know, who cares? Kidding aside, the far right and the Trump administration does not want people being educated. That not only works to their favor, but they've been quite open about that. Just look at what Betsy DeVos has been doing. Again, urban areas are being trashed by the virus. People of color are being hit harder. It is a eugenic virus. It is killing older people and people with complicating medical conditions. And it is a divide and conquer virus. It is working to separate the old from the young. And I find it very interesting that women are less susceptible to it than men. This could further the divide between male and female. I think most importantly, and we will go into this in an upcoming program, people wonder why I call this bio-psyop apocalypse. It is absolutely ravaging people's psychology. I think much of the social unrest in this country, both on the right and the left, is being driven in part, not completely, but in part, by the fact that people, from black people in inner cities to some of the white folks who are demonstrating against them and or joining militias, to the police themselves, people are frightened. They are frightened of something they can't see, the virus, and they are terrified of something they can see only too clearly, which is economic devastation. People are not working, they need money, and they are frightened. And fear is an implosive emotion. And past a point when people are being subjected to it, they tend to react expansively or explosively with rage. And I believe that at a psychological level, a fair amount of the social unrest in this country is being greatly exaggerated by, or driven, perhaps would be a better word, by the fact that people all across the spectrum, from black folks to people in some of the white militias to cops themselves, are frightened. And when you are frightened, the tendency is to become angry. And I will go into this at greater length in shows to come. In particular, the wealth concentration virus talking about, that we will talk about the stock market. We will talk about, in particular, something we will be talking about in this program, big pharma, companies like Gilead Sciences and Remdesivir, companies like Moderna, financed by DARPA, and fast-tracking a vaccine with the help of the federal government, which has financed what they did in considerable measure. But to give you an idea, or to give the audience an idea of how this pandemic is seen as beneficial, how it is driving wealth concentration. Just to give a brief window into that, from the Guardian of June 1st of 2020, the Guardian, of course, a UK paper, how the libertarian right plans to profit from the pandemic. This is by Quinn Slobodian, S-L-O-B-O-D-I-A-N. A few key highlights of this, and the article is accessed in the written description for this show, which will be available presently. Speaking of the article has this lead-in: disaster capitalists dream of disassembling nation states for post-viral exploitation. Whether or not they disassemble nation states, this is driving the right-wing agenda. Some excerpts from this Guardian article. They spy opportunity in the crisis and wager that we might be able to ride the wave of the pandemic into a new tomorrow where the virus shatters the global map and undermines the power of democratic nation states. The U.S. is ground zero for this type of thinking. Another excerpt. In an analysis released at the end of April, Arthur Laffer and Stephen Moore, two of Trump's closest economic confidants and authors of the book on Trumponomics, predict that blue Democratic states would be slower than red states to recover because of what they saw as their pre-existing excess of regulation and taxes. Their analysis divided the U.S. map into laggard anti-growth states and momentum pro-growth states. The former have minimum wages, pro-union laws, and state income tax. the latter are free of such regulations. In the established mode of disaster capitalism, Laffer and Moore's analysis appears to see the pandemic as a way to compel anti-growth, unquote, states to adopt ever lower tax rates in order to attract mobile capital and labor. It suggests those who resist will not be bailed out by redistribution from the central government, but left to languish in a deserved economic depression. The effect is reminiscent of social Darwinism applied as a philosophy of government. As nations are divided into different zones according to their respective stages of viral and economic recovery, the well-off could follow Elon Musk's recent threat to relocate from California to Texas, voting with their feet for locations that elude redistributive taxation. In our post-pandemic future, the flight to safety away from contagious red zones, unquote, could be a flight from the nation state as we know it. Well, some of those states, such as New York's state, are doing relatively well, although there are serious problems for New York City. And again, the wealth concentration virus is also the wealth depletion virus for a great many things, including many urban centers, public schools, maybe colleges, public transit systems, nonprofits, and we will see how this plays out. One of the reasons I went into the context of covert operations that are being directed against China and which, in my opinion, the COVID-19 is a part, was to provide, again, political and historical context to what is taking place. By way of review, I'm going to read a few excerpts from a very important article by an otherwise, well, a woman named Whitney Webb, W-E-B-B, from the Last American Vagabond blog of January 30th of 2020, a very important article which she has not followed up on. Some of her work appears to be of the alt-right, unquote, genre. However, this is scholarly and right on the money and is as important as anything I have read in almost half a century. I'm about to begin my 42nd year on the air. The article, again, by Whitney Webb, Last American Vagabond, January 30th of 2020, Bats, Gene Editing, and Bioweapons. Recent DARPA experiments raise concerns amid coronavirus outbreak. A few aspects of this. The Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, or DARPA, began spending millions on such research in 2018, and some of those Pentagon-funded studies were conducted at known U.S. military bioweapons labs bordering China and resulted in the discovery of dozens of new coronavirus strains as recently as last April. Furthermore, the ties of the Pentagon's main biodefense lab to a virology institute in Wuhan, China, where the current outbreak is believed to have begun, have been unreported in English-language media thus far. For instance, DARPA spent $10 million on one project in 2018, quote, to unravel the complex causes of bat-borne viruses that have recently made the jump to humans, causing concern among global health officials, unquote. Another research project backed by both DARPA and the National Institutes of Health saw researchers at Colorado State University examine the coronavirus that causes Middle East respiratory syndrome in bats and camels, quote, to understand the role of these bats, of these hosts, excuse me, in transmitting disease to humans. This, once again, because we are going to come back to research into MERS coronaviruses that was done under the auspices of DARPA by Moderna, and we're going to come back to Moderna, and it was the research being done in connection with DARPA by Moderna that facilitated the speed with which they have been able to develop their experimental COVID-19 vaccine. Another research project backed by both DARPA and the NIH, saw researchers at Colorado State University examine the coronavirus that causes Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, in bats and camels, quote, to understand the role of these hosts in transmitting disease to humans, unquote. For instance, one study conducted in southern China in 2018 resulted in the discovery of 89 new novel bat coronavirus, unquote, strains that use the same receptor as the coronavirus known as Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. That study was jointly funded by the Chinese government's Ministry of Science and Technology, the USAID, an organization long alleged to be a front for U.S. intelligence, and the U.S. National Institute of Health, which has collaborated with both the CIA and the Pentagon on infectious disease and bioweapons research. This research has a network with Chinese research facilities in Wuhan. Once again, the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases' problematic record of safety at such facilities, in this case Fort Detrick, is of particular concern in light of the recent coronavirus outbreak in China. As this report will soon reveal, this is because USAMRIID has a decades-old and close partnership with the University of Wuhan's Institute of Medical Virology, which is located in the epicenter of the current outbreak. Duke University is also jointly partnered with China's Wuhan University, which is based in the city where the current coronavirus outbreak began, which resulted in the opening of the China-based Duke Kunshan University, or DKU, in 2018. Notably, China's Wuhan University, in addition to its partnership with Duke, also includes a multi-lab institute of medical virology that has worked closely with the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases since the 1980s, according to its website. By the way, that lab is the lab that the right-wing propaganda hinting that either this virus escaped from that laboratory or was deliberately released. That is the lab, and there is a joint U.S.-Chinese program in which the U.S. funding comes from traditional organizations that have served as CIA and or Pentagon conduits, organizations like the aforementioned USAID or the NIH. That is, again, the laboratory that is the focal point of right-wing propaganda by people like Mike Pompeo and at times Donald Trump himself. We will come back to that in our next program when we talk about, for example, Dr. Ralph Barrich from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and some of the gain-of-function experiments that have been performed. One of the things I find very alarming is a combination of the deep military involvement in the research that is going into not only the vaccines, but the aforementioned remdesivir, and not only the military involvement, but some of this, for example, the mRNA vaccine that is being developed by Moderna, involves the changing of the injection of genetic material. Who knows exactly what that will involve? People knowledgeable of the technology involved have warned that very often there are severe negative side effects from the use of mRNA vaccines. That is a caveat I would give. And in considering COVID-19 as part of what I call the paperclip legacy, with people like Josef Mengele having networked with and at times worked with U.S. intelligence and having taken advantage of some, or having been involved with some of the same networks as other Nazi war criminals who went to work for the U.S. after World War II, I think the genetic implications of some of this research are truly alarming. noting how some of this overlaps gene driving, once again from the Whitney Webb article. Concerns about Pentagon experiments with biological weapons have garnered renewed media attention, particularly after it was revealed in 2017 that DARPA was the top funder of the controversial gene drive technology, which has the power to permanently alter the genetics of entire populations while targeting others for extinction. At least two of DARPA's studies using this controversial technology were classified and, quote, focused on the potential military application of gene drive technology and use of gene drives in agriculture, unquote, according to media reports. The revelation came after an organization called the ETC Group obtained over 1,000 emails on the military's interest in the technology as part of a Freedom of Information Act request. Co-director of the ETC Group, Jim Thomas, said that this technology may be used as a biological weapon. Quote, gene drives are a powerful and dangerous new technology, and potential biological weapons could have disastrous impacts on peace, food security, and the environment, especially if misused. The fact that gene drive development is now being primarily funded and structured by the U.S. military raises alarming questions about this entire field, unquote. And again, note that the DARPA financing of some of these projects involves Moderna, and we're going to be focusing on Moderna in a big, big way. The second pharmaceutical company that was selected by CEPI to develop a vaccine for the new coronavirus is Moderna Incorporated, which will develop a vaccine for the novel coronavirus of concern in collaboration with the U.S. National Institute of Health, and which will be funded entirely by CEPI. The vaccine in question, as opposed to Inovia's DNA vaccine, will be a messenger RNA or mRNA vaccine. Though different than a DNA vaccine, mRNA vaccines still use genetic material to, quote, direct the body's cells to produce intracellular, membrane, or secreted proteins, unquote. Moderna's mRNA treatments, including its mRNA vaccines, were largely developed using a $25 million grant from DARPA, and it often touts its strategic alliance with DARPA in press releases. And we're going to talk about the role of the DARPA and government backing of Moderna, and in particular how their work into the aforementioned MERS virus. And that was one of the things that was studied here, reviewing again from the Whitney Webb article. For instance, one study conducted in southern China in 2018 resulted in the discovery of 89, quote, new novel bat coronavirus, unquote, strains that use the same receptor as the coronavirus known as Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. And we'll be talking about how that MERS research and DARPA plays into the Moderna vaccine. In For the Record 1131, we went into Moderna at great length, and there are, to make a very long story very short, many, many things to be worried about in connection with Moderna and their vaccine. In For the Record 1138, we took a look at the fact that at the aforementioned USAMRIID, the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, one of the things they were going into, and by the way, they were closed down temporarily by the CDC at the beginning of August of 2019 for safety violations. It was not revealed exactly what it was that, what the select agents as these pathogenic organisms were called were. It is known, however, that at this facility at this time, primates, non-human primates, were being, specifically rhesus macaque monkeys, were being infected with Ebola, and remdesivir was being tested on them. It turns out that the violations involving some non-human primates that were infected with a select agent, whether that was Ebola, or whether it was something else, perhaps a coronavirus, whether MERS, or perhaps even COV2, we do not know. But what we do know is that as prior to the fact that the U.S. AMRIIB was closed down at the beginning of August of 2019, they were working with remdesivir and testing it on non-human primates, and some of those non-human primates were involved with the safety violations that alarmed the CDC. We have looked at remdesivir at great length, and the fact that Gilead Sciences, which developed remdesivir, has itself strong overlap historically with elements of the national security establishment and or individuals. The chairman of the board for many years was Donald Rumsfeld, who left that position to become Secretary of Defense. It was while he was head of the Pentagon that the Pentagon and other U.S. government agencies bought tremendous amounts of oseltamivir or Tamiflu to protect against the H5N1 flu epidemic, or epidemic to be, as it was seen, that never fully materialized. But Donald Rumsfeld got rich. And Gilead Sciences is the maker of remdesivir, which has been touted, as we looked at, in the For the Record program 1132 and 1134 and 1138 by the Trump administration and, quote, scientists against COVID-19, unquote, which involves, quote, scientists, unquote, like Peter Thiel and people like Michael Milken, and which was discarding with normal safety procedures to fast-track remdesivir in order to get that on the market. Once again, Whitney Webb writes in her last Vagabond article, the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, Maryland, the U.S. military's lead laboratory for biological defense, unquote, research since the late 1960s, was forced to halt all research it was conducting with a series of deadly pathogens after the CDC found that it lacked, quote, sufficient systems in place to decontaminate wastewater, unquote, from its highest security labs, and failure of staff to follow safety procedures, among other lapses. The facility contains both Level 3 and Level 4 biosafety labs. While it is unknown if experiments involving coronaviruses were ongoing at the time, USAMRIIB has recently been involved in research born out of the Pentagon's recent concern about the use of bats as bioweapons. And remdesivir has once again been able to vault over, so to speak, safety regulations. Note that the current head of the FDA for Donald Trump is a guy named Dr. Stephen Hahn. He has a background in cancer research and also the Hoover Institute, a major right-wing think tank at Stanford University. He does not have any experience with infectious diseases. Nonetheless, he and his FDA have fast-tracked, once again, remdesivir. They are expanding the use of COVID-19. Not only is this seen as potentially harmful because the data had justifying this move are non-existent, but in fact, although the positive benefits of remdesivir, which are documented up to a point, are limited, the availability of remdesivir for people who need it and for whom that limited usefulness has been documented may not be able to get it. From USA Today of August 28th of 2020 by Karen Weintraub, without evidence, unquote. Once again, FDA expands use of COVID-19 treatment without research to back it up. And again, this is against the background of USAMRIID doing research with remdesivir and on non-human primates, specifically rhesus macaques, and the fact that the CDC found that safety violations involving non-human primates and with a, quote, select agent, unquote, that we do not know, were involved in some of the safety regulations that caused the CDC to close down USAMRIID. Bear in mind, too, that USAMRIID uses private contractors. So the vast majority of people there could be people of integrity, and yet a few bad apples in there to perform the functions of malefactors could be mucking things up. But the fact that at such a sensitive facility, again, they're not handling jelly donuts. They are working with deadly pathogens. The fact that there are private contractors and with relatively lax oversight, well, that is alarming indeed. Once again now, from USA Today of August 28th of 2020, without evidence, once again, FDA expands use of COVID-19 treatment without research to back it up. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration late Friday allowed the drug remdesivir to be used on all patients hospitalized with COVID-19, although no published research supports such widespread use. And again, we have taken a look at how Trump administration insiders network with people like Tommy Hicks, who in turn is networked with people like Steve Bannon and others. Steve Bannon was recently arrested. We'll talk more about that in a future program. People like Tommy Hicks Jr. Our network with the people fast-tracking remdesivir. We will talk about that at greater length in some of the forthcoming wealth concentration virus programs. But once again, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration late Friday allowed the drug remdesivir to be used on all patients hospitalized with COVID-19, although no published research supports such widespread use. The approval allows doctors freedom to prescribe the antiviral earlier, but it comes less than a week after the agency approved use of convalescent plasma without published scientific support, fueling concerns the agency is yielding to political pressure. It, quote, it seems to be a pattern of approval without science, without data, without evidence, unquote, said Dr. Eric Topol, T-O-P-O-L, Vice President for Research at Scripps Research in La Jolla, California, and a national expert on the use of data in medical research. In May, the FDA allowed remdesivir to be used for hospitalized adults who need oxygen, but not those sick enough to require ventilation. A government study published that month in the New England Journal of Medicine found those patients recovered faster than those who hadn't gotten the drug, although there was no evidence that it saved lives. Earlier this month, the Journal of the American Medical Association published a study of less severely ill hospitalized adults showing that 5 days of treatment with remdesivir was better than standard care, though, quote, the difference was of uncertain clinical importance, unquote. No other studies have been published supporting the more widespread use of remdesivir that has now been authorized. Yet the FDA said the data is now compelling enough to expand its use to all hospitalized patients, including children. Quote, The Baptists showed that this treatment has the potential to help even more hospitalized patients who are suffering from the effects of this devastating virus, unquote, FDA Commissioner Dr. Stephen A. Hahn said in a prepared statement announcing the agency had granted an emergency use authorization for remdesivir. And we'll see how people like Dr. Hahn and his predecessor as head of the FDA, a Pfizer-connected individual, that's Pfizer, a big element, a major company in big pharma, Scott Gottlieb, has said, well, in the event of an emergency, we could fast-track vaccines. The aforementioned Dr. Eric Topol. Topol said he was appalled by the expanded approval of the drug, quote, there are no data to support wide use of remdesivir, unquote. He said, this is extraordinary, unquote. The FDA announced the expanded use of remdesivir at 5:20 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, citing the studies published in May and August. In a statement, Dr. Murdad Parsey, P-A-R-S-E-Y, Chief Medical Officer of the Foster City, California-based Gilead Sciences Incorporated, said the company was pleased with the FDA's decision to expand use of the drug, which he referred to by its trade name. Hahn, a radiation oncologist and former chief medical executive of the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, has been FDA commissioner only since December, but this is the fourth time he has run afoul of the scientific community for his agency's actions to combat the coronavirus. Sunday, Hahn and President Trump announced the FDA would issue emergency approval for convalescent plasma, in which blood products from recovered patients are administered to those whose immune systems haven't built up enough antibodies to fight off the virus. The scientific community was horrified by the authorization of plasma and its characterization by Hahn and the president. Between that and Friday's announcement for remdesivir, Topol said the agency's emergency approval process appears, quote, farcical, unquote. So again, remdesivir, Gilead Sciences, people like J.R. Bass, network with Tommy Hicks and on one hand, and people like Steve Bannon on the other. Well, we will talk more about remdesivir in the context of the one of our shows about the wealth concentration virus. And again, if people think this is being mishandled, they are wrong. This is being done quite deliberately, in my opinion. And this virus, in many ways, as I touched on in a synoptic way, is fulfilling the ideological wet dream of the right wing. And now we turn to vaccines. Yes, indeed. New York Times, September 2nd of 2020. CDC tells states how to prepare for COVID-19 vaccine by early November, by Sheila Kaplan, Catherine J. Wu, and Katie Thomas. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has notified public health officials in all 50 states and 5 large cities to prepare to distribute a coronavirus vaccine to health workers and other high-risk groups as soon as late October or early November. The new CDC guidance is the latest sign of an accelerating race for a vaccine to greatly ease a pandemic that has killed more than 184,000 Americans. The documents were set out on the same day that President Trump told the nation in his speech to the Republican National Convention that a vaccine might arrive before the end of the year. Over the past week, both Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, the country's top infectious disease expert, and Dr. Stephen Hahn, who heads the FDA, have said in interviews with news organizations that a vaccine may be available for certain groups before clinical trials have been completed if the data is overwhelmingly positive. Public health experts agree that agencies at all levels of government should urgently prepare for what will eventually be a vast, complex effort to vaccinate hundreds of millions of Americans. But the possibility of a rollout in late October or early November has heightened concerns that the Trump administration is seeking to rush the distribution of a vaccine or simply to hype that one is possible before Election Day on November 3rd. The CDC plans lay out technical specifications for two candidates described as Vaccine A and Vaccine B, including requirements for shipping, mixing, storage, and administration. The details seem to match the products developed by Pfizer and Moderna, which are the furthest along in late-stage clinical trials. On August 20th, Pfizer said it was on track, unquote, for seeking government review as early as October of 2020, unquote. The guidance noted that healthcare professionals, including long-term care employees, would be among the first to receive the product, along with other essential workers and national security employees. People 65 or older, as well as Native Americans and those who are from, quote, racial and ethnic minority populations, unquote, or incarcerated, all communities known to be at greater risk of contracting the virus and experiencing severe disease, were also prioritized in the documents. It's possible to draw conclusions sooner, quote, if there is an overwhelming effect, unquote, in which vaccinated people appear to be far better protected from the disease, said Padmini Pillai, P-I-L-L-A-I, a vaccine researcher and immunologist at MIT. But data gathered early in a trial might not hold true months down the line, and researchers need time to test large numbers of people from a variety of backgrounds to determine how well the vaccine works in different populations, including the vulnerable communities identified in the guidelines. By the way, note that Moderna, which we're going to come to, is one of those companies heavily financed by DARPA, and we'll see how their coronavirus vaccine stems from the MERS work that they were doing and financed in part by the government. Pfizer is the company for whom Scott Gottlieb, Dr. Hahn's predecessor as head of the FDA, was affiliated. Next, from the Financial Times of August 30th, and by the way, I should add, I am not an anti-vaxxer. However, I don't trust the Trump administration. I am concerned about the military involvement with so many phases of this, and I have great reservations about Big Pharma, in particular in a completely deregulated and government-massaged context, and by God, that sure as hell is going on with the Trump administration. From the FT, the Financial Times of August 30th of 2020, FDA head says he is willing to fast-track COVID-19 vaccine by Kieran, K-I-R-E-N, Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y. The head of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has said he is willing to bypass the normal approval process to authorize a COVID-19 vaccine as soon as possible, but has insisted he will not do so to please Donald Trump. In an interview with the FT, Stephen Hahn said his agency was prepared to authorize a vaccine before phase 3 clinical trials were complete, as long as officials believed the benefits outweighed the risks. But he defended his embattled organization against accusations that it was rushing the process to boost Mr. Trump's re-election prospects. Quote, it is up to the sponsor, vaccine developer, to apply for authorization or approval, and we make an adjudication of their application, unquote, Dr. Hahn said, again quoting, if they do that before the end of phase 3, we may find that appropriate. We may find that inappropriate. We will make a determination. Dr. Hahn insisted there was a safe way to make a vaccine available before the end of phase 3 trials, potentially by issuing an emergency authorization for use by certain groups rather than a blanket approval. last Saturday. Mr. Trump accused, quote, deep state, unquote, elements at the FDA of moving too slowly in approving new treatments for coronavirus in an effort to harm him politically. A day later, Dr. Hahn and Mr. Trump jointly announced emergency authorization for convalescent plasma, which uses the plasma of recovered COVID-19 patients as a treatment. But Dr. Hahn was immediately criticized for overstating its benefits. And Fauci has also said that that we may be able to fast-track a vaccine. Kaiser Health News of September 1st of 2020. Fauci says COVID vaccine trials could Fauci says COVID vaccine trials could end early if results are overwhelming. This by Liz Szabo, S-Z-A-B-O, of Kaiser Health News. Again, September 1st of 2020. COVID-19 vaccine could be available earlier than expected if ongoing clinical trials produce overwhelmingly positive results, said Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease official, in an interview Tuesday with KHN. Although two ongoing clinical trials of 30,000 volunteers are expected to conclude by the end of the year, Fauci said an independent board has the authority to end the trials weeks early if interim results are overwhelmingly positive or negative. The Data and Safety Monitoring Board could say, quote, the data is so good right now that you can say it's safe and effective, unquote, Fauci said. In that case, researchers would have a, quote, moral obligation, unquote, to end the trial early and make the active vaccine available to everyone in the study, including those who have been given placebos, and accelerate the process to give the vaccine to millions. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said he trusts the independent members of the DSMB, who are not government employees, to hold vaccines to high standards without being politically influenced. Although the safety board can recommend stopping a trial, the ultimate decision to hold a study is made by the scientists running the trial, Dr. Topol said. A vaccine manufacturer could then apply to the Food and Drug Administration for an emergency use authorization, which can be granted quickly, or continue through the regular drug approval process, which requires more time and evidence. Stopping trials early poses a number of risks, such as making a vaccine look more effective than it really is, Popo said. Quote, if you stop something early, you can get an exaggerated benefit that isn't real, unquote, because less positive evidence only emerges later, Topol said. Stopping the studies early also could prevent researchers from recruiting more minority volunteers. So far, only about 1 in 5 trial participants are Black or Hispanic. Given that Blacks and Hispanics have been hit harder than other groups by the pandemic, Topol said, it is important that they make up a larger part of vaccine trials. A smaller, shorter trial could fail to detect important vaccine side effects, which could become apparent only after millions of people have been immunized, said Offit, director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And in addition to the Moderna vaccine, more about this. We may not have time to get into that in this program because we're almost out of time, but we will certainly continue with that in our next program. Pfizer was another of the vaccine. It appears that two vaccines, one probably Moderna, the other by Pfizer, are fast-tracked and very possibly will get authorization before the election, thereby boosting Donald Trump and his chances of re-election. Note that Scott Gottlieb, who was the predecessor to Dr. Stephen Hahn from the Hoover Institute, sits on the board of Pfizer, from CNBC of August 31st of 2020 by Kevin Stankiewicz, Stankiewicz. Coronavirus vaccine before election unlikely. Dr. Gottlieb on FDA chief's possible fast track. Gottlieb said the only circumstance in which a vaccine trial could offer sufficient effectiveness data in October would be if the U.S. coronavirus outbreak, quote, is very dense, unquote, meaning there is high transmission rates throughout the general population and the vaccines prove to be, quote, very effective, unquote, in those in trials, quote. But that probably wouldn't leave enough time to issue an emergency use authorization by November, regardless, unquote, said Gottlieb, who led the FDA in the Trump administration from May of 2017 to April of 2019. Gottlieb, who preceded Hahn at the FDA, said he was not exactly sure what Hahn's comments meant, that the benefits outweigh the risks. It's possible what Dr. Hahn was referring to was issuing an emergency use authorization before the trials are fully complete, insofar as there are two-year trials. There's going to be a two-year period of safety follow-up on these clinical trials, Gottlieb said. Last week at the Republican National Convention, Trump said the U.S., quote, will produce a vaccine before the end of the year or maybe even sooner, unquote, setting off concerns, again, that the approval process could be influenced by political considerations instead of health and science. Earlier this month, Trump was asked in a radio interview whether a vaccine could be ready before November 3rd, the date of the presidential election, quote, I think in some cases, it's possible before, but right around that time, unquote, he said in response. So, if in fact, plandemic, which is what it is, not a pandemic, it is a plandemic, in my opinion, if it does get worse, and that is something that can be arranged, populations can be vectored, certainly the oncoming of flu season is going to exacerbate things. There have been a lot of problems with university, with college students returning to work, returning to their campuses, and perhaps flu season with campus-based outbreaks, and then the students return home to their hometowns and exacerbate things further, in connection with what I ruminated about in the series about the space plane and COVID-19 as the paperclip legacy. Here in California and throughout the West, there have been record fires that in turn have produced terrible air and air pollution. That pollution exacerbates the COVID-19 infection. So the possibility that things could get very much worse is something that we very much have to be aware of. We will continue with this line of inquiry, and we're going to be talking about Moderna, and the amount of federal financing that they received is front and center. In applying for their patents, Moderna failed to disclose the federal financing, including DARPA financing, but they have been very candid about doing that in their press releases. And we talked about how Moderna manipulates press releases in For the Record program 1131. And it was some of the work that the Moderna was doing with the MERS virus, bear in mind the DARPA research into MERS, that has facilitated the development of their SARS-CoV/COVID-19 virus. We, however, will be talking about this in our next program. And again, the fast tracking of remdesivir, the fact that it was being tested at USAMRIID before they got shut down by CDC, and the DARPA involvement with Moderna are things to consider. We will talk about that, however, in our next program. This concludes For the Record program number 1151, BioPsyop Apocalypse Now, Part 11, COVID-19 Updates, Part 2. This is being recorded on September 13th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.